Welcome back to Office 365 Administering for Small Businesses Jumpstart Series. I'm Chris Oakman, Steve Hall. We are back from our meal break, so if we fall asleep, we ate well. We're going to have to come back to Redmond more often.
The food is good.
So this module is Exchange Online Deployment and Migration. This is the seventh module today. We've got two left. We have Exchange Security and Protection and Online Archiving and Compliance. I've seen some questions out there about both of those, so stay tuned for the next modules. Let's jump right in. Exchange Online Deployment and Migration, Deployment Considerations. And this slide says mid-sized business and enterprises. We will get that changed before this deck goes out. This is geared towards small businesses. We are going to talk a little bit about some mid-size and enterprise businesses, but this is really geared toward the smaller businesses this Jumpstart is. So migration options, we have a couple. Remote move migration, this is new. Used to migrate on-premise Exchange mailboxes to Exchange Online in an Exchange hybrid deployment. So this, of course, requires a hybrid deployment. A staged Exchange migration. This has been around. Mailboxes in your on-premise Exchange organization are migrated to Exchange Online in batches. A staged migration is a good option if your current on-premise email organization and migration goal meet some conditions. You might need, if you're migrating maybe from Office 2003, or not Office, Exchange 2007, we want to do staged migration. We're going to migrate some mailboxes, we're going to test them, and then we're going to migrate the rest. Okay. Cutover Exchange migration. This is mailboxes in your on-premise Exchange organization are all migrated to Exchange Online in single migration batch. So this is something you would do in... maybe on an evening, and the next morning everybody's on Exchange in the cloud. So, and then IMAP migration, contents of users' mailboxes in an IMAP messaging system are migrated to their Exchange Online mailboxes. And let's compare the migration types. If we're migrating from Exchange 2013, Exchange 2010, 2007, 2003, less than 1,000 mailboxes, we recommend a cutover Exchange migration. So if you're less than 1,000 mailboxes, Microsoft recommends a cutover. If you're less than 1,000 mailboxes, Exchange 2007 or 2003, we can do a staged Exchange migration. And if you're more than 1,000 mailboxes in 2007 or 2003, we want to do a staged Exchange migration or a remote move migration at Exchange hybrid deployment. More than 1,000 mailboxes, Exchange 2013, 2010, remote move migration, Exchange hybrid deployment. Earlier versions of Exchange 2000, earlier versions, no maximum IMAP migration, and non-Exchange on-premise messaging system, again, IMAP migration. Okay. So we have some included web-based Exchange migration. There's some free migration tools, no software to install. Migrates email, calendar, contacts, and tasks from Exchange 2003, 2007, 2010. Migrate email from all platforms and supported IMAP. And allows for fast cutover or staged migration. This is included tools. The slide says there are additional options available with tools from migration partners. Microsoft does have some approved migration partners. Exchange deployment. In migration, the decision framework, how to decide which migration to choose. A good way to determine is by running the Exchange 2013 Deployment Assistant. This is linked here. We'll make sure that that is linked in the resources as well, and I believe it is at the end of the slide deck. So the Exchange Deployment Assistant is a tool that asks you some questions. You answer these questions and it tells you the best way to do your migration, whether you're on-premise, hybrid, or cloud only. The tool will look, the web page will come up, look like this right here. You have on-premise, hybrid, cloud only. You choose the one that you want to do, and it will walk you through that step by step. That's a good tool to use. Choice of migration solutions. Simple migrations are considered IMAP, cutover, and staged. Hybrid, of course, is hybrid deployment. And then what's supported. So IMAP, everything is supported with IMAP. Cutover, 2003, 2007, 10, and 13. Staged, 2003, 2007, and 2010 hybrid, and 2013 hybrid. So how long does it take? You know, here's a help to pick your exchange migration solution. You know, if we're doing a hybrid coexistence, it can take several months. If you look at this slide here, this is the length of time. Cutover migration can be fairly quick, less than a week to 2 weeks. A staged migration, you know, up to 5,000 users, can take 3 weeks or so. And then hybrid coexistence can take several months to get fully configured, get perfectly working, and to migrate your people. It can also, the hybrid coexistence can stay in existence for as long as you need it to. It can be an indefinitely you can keep Exchange Online and on-premise together in a hybrid situation. Deployment plan decision factors. Obviously, your source server. What is your source server? Where are you migrating from? Whether you're migrating from online, another product online, Exchange, IMAP, Lotus Notes. What size your business is, large, medium, or small. Your coexistence requirements, simple or rich. Provisioning, DirSync, manual bulk provisioning, automatic provisioning. And then identity management, on-premise, single sign-on, or on-cloud, is all part of your deployment plan. Cutover versus hybrid. Can I do it over a weekend? Sure. Cutover is executed over a weekend. Switch to the MX records. All users are moved as part of a big switch to the cloud. Pilot mailboxes with alternate domain name. So you can test your cloud solution with using that domain on Microsoft.com. No on-premise configuration or hardware. Hybrid execution over a period of time, week, month, year, indefinite. No requirement to flip a switch. You can run in hybrid indefinitely. Requires on-premise configuration and hardware. We'll talk about that shortly. Simple migrations. So we're going to migrate email from an IMAP server to cloud-based mailboxes. We've put a nice link here to the step-by-step Microsoft article on how to do this. IMAP POP migration requirements. On-premise migration tool is not required. Access to IMAP ports, 143.993. User must be provisioned in the cloud prior to migration. Bulk provisioning, CSV parser, manual, etc. Gather user credentials or set up admin credentials. Prepare a CSV file with a list of users. And what needs to be in that CSV file? We need to have the email address, the username, and password. Okay, and a max of 50,000 rows and maximum of 10 megabytes in size for that upload. What is migrated? What's not migrated? Mail messages are migrated, inbox and other folders. Maximum of 50,000 items. So if you have a user with 50,001 items, that one item is not going to migrate. Possible to exclude specific folders from migration. You can exclude deleted items, junk email. What is not migrated? Contacts, calendars, tasks, excluded folders, folders with a forward slash in the folder name, and messages larger than 35 megabytes. All right, so that's what's not migrated. The end user experience. The admin must distribute new passwords. Users' Outlook profiles must be recreated using a new password, and this includes things like signatures, your quick types. All of that is not migrated during this solution. Okay, all mail is downloaded from Office 365 mailbox. The OST file must be recreated, so it recreates that whole Outlook profile. User sets a personalized password, so that we can set that, or you can set that for them, or they can set it themselves. We showed them how in a previous module. Yep. User recreates their calendar, their contacts, their tasks, signatures, and autocompletes. So all of that needs to be recreated.
Okay. Autocomplete's a pretty big one.
It is a huge one. And one of the things that we've run into with autocompletes is once they've migrated to the cloud, let's say we've migrated them from Exchange 2003 solution to cloud, that autocomplete will have the local Exchange addresses in it. So if they try to
quick type, you have to go in and change the X400s, either remove the X400s and repopulate them, or you can use a few tools, open up the entire auto streaming file and a CSV, and you can change the actual the autocomplete X400s to a SMTP email addresses, which is what you're going to want to do, because if they're not sending out to valid SMTP addresses, they're going to be old references to the old Exchange server if it came from an Exchange server. Therefore, internal messages will bounce if they're using the same autocomplete file. Right. Just a gotcha to look out for.
Yep. So it's definitely a big gotcha. Typical IMAP to POP cutover migration flow, provision the users in Office 365, gather credentials and prepare the CSV file, enter the server settings and upload the CSV file, initial sync, incremental syncs, change the MX records, complete the migration, final sync and cleanup, and of course setup of all Outlook profiles. So this can be a time-consuming process. Yes, it can be done over a weekend for a small business, but it can be a very time-consuming process and labor-intensive process if we need to go and touch every user's computer to get those things set up. Exchange cutover migration.
Which is very common for this.
This is very common. This is the most common.
For the SMB?
For the SMB, this is the most common type of migration that you're going to do. And again, I've linked, put a link here to the exact step-by-step Microsoft solution on how to do this. So this is from Exchange to Office 365, whether it's Exchange 2003, 2007, 2010, even 2013, if you want to do a cutover migration from that. The objective, a simple Exchange migration solution for small and medium businesses to move to Office 365. The organization should be less than 1,000 users in size. Outlook Anywhere service needs to be enabled. Identity management is done in the cloud. Okay.
There was a couple of quick questions going back, and it's some clarity being asked about the number of items can be migrated back with the actual pop and cutover.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, it was 50,000 rows in the CSV file and 500,000 items.
Right.
So the question is it 50,000 or 500,000? 50,000 rows in the actual CSV file and 500,000 items. So there are two different numbers that apply differently. So
okay.
Clearing that up.
Thanks for clearing that up. The capability, migration without the need of tools. For on-premise tools, migration from Exchange Server 2003 and greater. On-premise or hosted systems, integrated provisioning, high-fidelity migrations, mail, calendar, tasks, and many more. So this is going to migrate a lot more information than the IMAP did. The user's not going to have to reset up their calendar, those kind of things. Outlook Anywhere on the source Exchange org that must have SSL certificate issued by a public CA. Now, we've seen a lot of small businesses that installed Small Business Server 2003 and never put a SSL certificate on that server. You're going to have to do it in order to do this kind of migration. Okay. Migration account with full access or receive as permissions to all mailboxes that will be migrated. So you're going to have to use an administrator of some sort. SMTP domains will be configured in the Office 365 tenant. DirSync cannot be enabled on the Office 365 tenant for this migration. And it's a maximum of 1,000 mailboxes. Okay. Accounts and provisioning. Migration process creates users, mailboxes, distribution groups, and email accounts. Mailboxes are configured so that replies to migrated messages will work after migration. No access to passwords from the source directory. New passwords created for all provisioned users. A link to download passwords is sent to the admin. Users must change password on their first login. Okay. And the migration flow. New migration, we're going to automatically provision the users. And it's going to create the users' mailboxes and contacts. Initial sync, migrate all mailboxes, incremental sync every 24 hours. So you can set this up a week before your estimated migration. You're going to want to get all the email migrated first, and this can take a while depending on the organization and the size of the email and the user's mailboxes. So we want to set that up, you know, a good week ahead of time, give that plenty of time to do that initial sync, and then it'll do an incremental sync every 24 hours to continue to synchronize new emails that come into the mailboxes. And then a final sync will be done after the migration completes. Once you've changed MX records to make sure that any email that came in may have still been an old MX record somewhere on the internet, it's going to get all of that email. Okay, and then the last thing, of course, you need to do is license those users so they have access to their account. They have a mailbox. Yep.
Otherwise, you'd be migrating nowhere.
Right. All right, limitations of cutover. These items are not migrated. Security groups, dynamic distribution lists, system mailboxes, dumpster, send as permissions, messages larger than 35 meg.
Know this information.
Yeah, know this information.
Because we get asked that a lot when we do migrations. It's like, well, I don't have permissions anymore to that. I don't have my full access, or I don't have that other user mailbox. No, you don't. It has to be recreated. So if you scope that well ahead of time, you can run some tools that will actually give you a report. What are the permissions applied on the legacy Exchange system?
Right.
And then you can create those ahead of time in the new system. So definitely know that information.
Mailboxes enabled for unified messaging cannot be migrated. So remember that. If you're using unified messaging in your on-premise organization, those mailboxes will not migrate. Existing cache mode files, OST files, cannot be preserved. So it's going to recreate the profile. Just keep that in mind. You're going to have to recreate that user's profile to reconnect them to Office 365. Partial migrations are not possible. We can't exclude folders. We can't, no time range selection. It's all or nothing. We migrate all the email in that user's mailbox, all their folders, deleted items, sent items, junk mail. It's all migrated. And it's not possible to configure the incremental sync interval. It's 24 hours by default. We can't change that. We can't force it. It just happens every 24 hours. All right, what's migrated? So message items, delivery ports, read, non-read receipts, NDRs, folders, rules, categories, calendar items, recurrences, exceptions, meeting requests, cancellations, out-of-office settings, categories, and tasks, notes, contacts, public delegates, folder permissions, custom forms, Outlook settings, folder favorites. All right, admin, the end user experience, admin needs to distribute new passwords to end users. Users' Outlook profiles are recreated using the new password. This is big. You have to recreate the user's profiles. All mail is downloaded from the Office 365 mailbox. The OST file must be recreated. That's part of that process. And then the user sets a personalized password. Here's a typical Exchange cutover migration flow. We enable Outlook Anywhere. We set up mailbox permissions. Enter remote server details. Provision mailboxes. Initial sync. Incremental sync. Change the MX records. Complete the migration. And final sync cleanup. This complete migration is a big step. That's where you're going to recreate all the user's Outlook profiles. That's where you're going to make sure that all their auto-completes are correct. That's where you're going to have them re-enter their signatures. That kind of stuff is all done in the complete the migration step.
So we're asked a question about auto-discover.
Mm-hmm.
Can I configure my Outlook without this? You can manually configure your Outlook. You have to know the server.
Mm-hmm.
The server and the... in the RPC settings. So yes, you can configure it without the autocomplete or autodiscover, sorry, but it's a lot easier with the autodiscover record created.
Yes.
So you can definitely get that mailbox.
All right, staged migration. So again, this is from Exchange to Office 365. Again, I've linked that to the Microsoft document on how to do this migration. So the objective is a simple Exchange migration solution for medium and large organizations. migration from Exchange Server 2003 and Exchange 2007 only, for migrating batches, high fidelity, mail calendar tasks, and many more. So for Exchange 2010, 2013, consider a cutover migration, cutover or hybrid migration. Requirements, Outlook Anywhere, again, on the source Exchange organization. Migration account with full access, SMTP domains configured. DirSync must be enabled on the Office 365 tenant. So for staged migration, this is the difference. You need to have DirSync enabled. This is simple coexistent. No limit on the number of mailboxes to migrate, up to 1,000 mailboxes in each CSV batch. So you can do multiple batches. All right, we're going to use DirSync to establish the address book in Office 365. Mail flow between all mailboxes. During migration, mailbox exists across on-premise and Office 365. End goal is to fully migrate to Office 365. No free busy calendar sharing between on-premise and Office 365. Okay, so users that have already been migrated cannot share free busy information with users that have not migrated yet. Account provisioning, for every on-premise mailbox to be migrated, there needs to be a MEU or mailbox in Office 365. Migration service relies on DirSync to do the provisioning. Passwords, target mailbox passwords need to be specified for all users. Administrators can force users to change passwords on first login. Now this will change with a new version of DirSync that's coming out. So that'll sync their on-premise password. Profiles, users, again, users must create their new Outlook profile. All right, staged batches of 1,000 users, max per batch. That's the second time you've seen that. It's probably important. Users start using their cloud mailboxes upon creation. New mail is available immediately. Old content fills in. Stamps target address and source mailboxes to support mail flow from on-premise to the cloud. In Exchange 2010 and Exchange 2013, the target address property can't be modified. This is the reason that staged Exchange migration doesn't support migrating Exchange 2010 and 2013 mailboxes to Exchange Online. And optional password change when you're done. So here's the migration flow for this. Typical DirSync setup. Set up mailbox permissions. Prepare the CSV files. Enter the remote server details, upgrade mailboxes, add target address to on-prem mailbox, data synchronizes, you change the MX records, complete the migration. So in this section right here, this is where you're in simple coexistence. Okay, so you're going to have some mailboxes online, some mailboxes on-prem, and you'll have a simple coexistence until you change the MX records. Once you have migrated everybody to the cloud, then you'll change the MX records and the migration will be completed.
I'm getting questions about migrating public folders, so mm-hmm. I'm actually attaching the link to the document that details that process.
Okay, great.
From the Office 365.
Great, so if anybody has questions about public folders, check
I'm
that link out.
I'm going to put it as a public answer.
Okay. All right, remote move migration. I said this was new in the beginning. It's really not new. It's just a new way of doing it. It's a new way of doing hybrid. All right, and this is Exchange 2010 to 2013 to Office 365, and for Exchange 2000 Server 2013 or Exchange Server 2013 hybrid deployments, I've attached a link here. Remote move migration provides a seamless look and feel of a single Exchange organization between an on-premise Exchange Server 2013 organization and Exchange Online in Microsoft Office 365. All right, capability, migration from Exchange Server 2010 and Exchange Server 2013 only. You want to migrate in batches, groups, or one at a time. Free, busy, and calendar sharing between on-premise and Exchange Online mailboxes, mail calendar tasks, and many more. All right, you have to implement a hybrid deployment to migrate more than 1,000 Exchange 2010 or Exchange 2013 mailboxes to Exchange Online.
Good thing to remember.
Yep. All right, hybrid key features, Federation Trust. We delegate delegated authentication for on-premise cloud web services, enables free busy calendar sharing, message tracking, online archive, and more. So somebody asked a question earlier, why would you have Office 365 in the cloud, or Exchange Online and Exchange on-prem? So here's a good example right here. If you wanted to, let's say you did not, you only had Exchange Server 2013 Standard Edition or 2010 Standard Edition, and you wanted to enable archiving, instead of going out and buying Exchange Enterprise licenses, you can buy Office 365 archiving, and you can can now do just the archiving portion of that in the cloud. Okay. Integrated admin experience, manage all of your Exchange functions, whether cloud or on-premises, from the same place. The Exchange Admin Center, EAC, manages both on-premise and the cloud Exchange. Okay. Native mailbox moves, online mailbox moves. So you've got an Outlook user that's running Outlook 2010, 2013, and their mailbox is not going to seem offline when you do that migration. It's gonna stay up. They may have a little degraded performance while their migration is happening, but once the migration is done, their Outlook will automatically configure itself to connect online. Preserves the Outlook profile and offline files. So the OST file is preserved, and it leverages a mailbox replication service to do this. Secure mail flow, authenticated and encrypted mail flow between your Exchange on-premise and online. So everything, all email between the two is fully encrypted. Preserves the internal Exchange message headers and support for compliance mail flow scenarios, central transport servers. Okay, hybrid coexistence feature comparison. So simple versus hybrid.
Know this.
Know this.
Yeah,
simple. Mail routing between on-premise and cloud. Mail routing with shared namespace and unified GAL can be accomplished with simple and hybrid. Everything else on this chart is hybrid only. So free busy calendar sharing, out of office, mail tips, OWA redirection, cross-premise. So one URL, mail.yourcompany.com, automatically routes to on-premise or on Exchange Online. Mailbox moves, single tool to manage cross-premise Exchange functions. Mailbox moves support both onboarding and offboarding. No Outlook reconfiguration or OST resync required. This is big. You know, if you've got a customer with 50 users and you want to migrate them from on-premise to online, you don't have to go to each desk and reconfigure their Outlook. So
That's huge. That is big. And
that's
a big time savings. I mean, it does take some, it's a high-end migration, but that if you're talking about a lot of users, that endpoint or that visiting each user's desk, whether it's by remote or it's on site, it takes a lot of time to reconfigure every Outlook profile.
Right.
And this process, be it it's a little more robust, it really does make for a good, easy migration, whereas, you know, the Outlook, the users are taken care of. And their experience is normally what we care about, the end user's experience. And that's
Right. Normally
a little better.
Yep. So we're going to preserve the authorization header, ensure internal email is not spam, resolve against a GAL. Centralized mail flow, ensure that all email routes inbound, outbound via on-prem. So, you know, any of your, maybe you already have a mail filtering application, that can stay in place while you're going through this process as well. Requirements, Exchange 2013, CAS Hub, mailbox server, on-premise, hybrid configuration in place, on-premise config, Office 365 config, Federation, certificates, etc., all need to be in place. Much of the config is automated by the new hybrid configuration wizard. It's as simple now as clicking a few buttons. SMTP domains configured in Office 365 tenant, and DirSync tool enabled in the Office 365 tenant is required. 2013 hybrid limitations. Exchange 2003 is not supported. In the past, it was supported with an Exchange 2010 migration server. It's no longer supported. You would have to do an on-premise migration from Exchange 2003 to at least Exchange 2010 in order to do a hybrid configuration. Okay. Delegation coexistence cross-premises. Delegated permissions are migrated when users are in the same batch. Migration of Sendes full access permissions. Okay.
So those, which is a big difference in the, yeah, in the migrations. This one includes the ability to carry attributes like delegation, as well as the ability to have your Outlook profile transferred. So if you have a lot of users and there's a lot of customization, this may be a path that you consider using for migrating that kind of client.
Yep. And here's a big one, because I'm going to read this and then I'm going to explain it. If configured for single sign-on, did you catch that? If it's configured for users for single sign-on, users log in with their AD credentials. Otherwise, admin needs to distribute new password to user, unless you use a new dirsync. So what this is saying here is, if configured for single sign-on, I'll say it again.
We just got a question about that.
Yep. So yes, you can do an Exchange 2013 hybrid deployment without ADFS. Okay. Microsoft recommends that if this is going to be a long-term hybrid deployment, if this is going to be something that you're going to keep your on-premise Exchange server and Office 365 for a long period of time, that you do include ADFS. But if it's a short migration span, you're going to use this to migrate users and then retire your on-premise server, there's no reason to implement ADFS to do this migration. You had a question, too? Did I answer?
That was basically the question. I mean, okay, to expand a little further, if we were to use dirsync and we wanted the SSL migration, or we wanted to have single sign-on, and we have a .local domain, would you want to make the changes to make that routable first?
Well,
you have to.
You have to, right. You cannot route that .local domain, so you're going to have to change your UPN before you can do that migration. Yep. All right. Back to the slide, user's current Outlook profile is updated with the Exchange Online server name via auto-discover. All right. Offline files do not have to be recreated, so this can save a lot of bandwidth, really, because you migrate the user up, their email goes from on-premise to Office 365, you recreate the user's profile, it downloads it back down. There's a lot of bandwidth if you have quite a few users. In this scenario, the OST file remains intact. If using Outlook at the time of the mailbox move, user is prompted to close and reopen Outlook. That's it. They are prompted to close it, reopen it. So migration process, let's go through this real quick. Sign up for Office 365. That should be at the start of all of these slides. Register your domains. Deploy Office 365 directory sync, install Exchange 2013 CAS and mailbox servers, and remember, with the enterprise versions of Office 365, you do get a license for on-premise 2013 Exchange. Publish the CAS server, assign SSL certificates, and change your firewall rules, and then run the hybrid wizard. Once a hybrid wizard is run, the hybrid is set up. You can then right-click on a user, remote move request, and move that root user from on-premise to online in a matter of clicks. Okay. Migration tools, also available via PowerShell. So we have a set of hybrid move commandlets, new move requests, get move requests, get move request statistics. Suspend, resume, and remove those move requests. So this is all quickly and easily available. So here's an example. New move request, identity, user principal name, remote host name would be mail.company.com, remote credentials, $cred, you would have entered that in previously. Target delivery domain is your tenant name, your domain.onmicrosoft.com name. And it's done. That user will go through a remote move sequence. You'll get a report. You can get a report on how long that migration is taking, how many, what it's taking to do that migration, and whether it fails or succeeds. You can set things like if it runs into errors, maybe that user has a corrupt message in their mailbox. You can set to skip those. You can set to stop the migration if it runs into one of those kind of things. Okay. And resources. All the resources I referred to earlier are listed here. The cutover, stage, remote move migrations, IMAP pop migrations, and of course the deployment assistant, which is big. If you have not used that deployment assistant before, please check that out. And you know, you can run through that. You don't have to put in any specific information. You can just run that wizard, and it'll tell you and link you to the files and documents that you need to have a successful migration.
So a couple of questions.
Okay.
One of them that I'm getting right now, can you use SMTP Relay in Office 365?
You can.
And I happen to have that link right here.
Okay.
So I'm just put that in the actual library. It's the actual process for creating SMTP
Relay. Yeah, there's a process for creating that SMTP Relay. So for those of you that have or customers that have a copier that sends PST files out to scan documents.
PDF.
PDF, yeah. Not PST files, but PDFs. You can set up an SMTP Relay within Office 365 to allow that to happen.
Here's one that I would happily answer. I have my client has a lot of shared mailboxes, or they call it, how do I migrate those?
Okay.
You want it? Or?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you can migrate them, but you want to give them a license while you're doing the migration. So you can actually migrate the mail in. You have to be able to, it has to be a valid user while you're migrating that email.
Right.
And then you can convert it.
Once it's migrated, then convert it to a shared mailbox, which will free up that license.
I assume this means, is there any plan to support the .lcl local internal authentication domains for DirSync? And the looks like Matt. I believe the answer is no.
Yeah,
well, I don't know if there are any plans. I can't speak to plans, but right now,
right now,
.locals are not supported.
.locals are not supported at all. Can the wildcard certificate be substituted for a SSL? Yes. Yeah, you can use a wildcard certificate. Let's see. Yes, and that's another thing. Someone just posted the SMT relay only allows for 1,000 emails a day. So if you've got a ton of PDF documents being scanned, you may want to consider that. Looking at another solution. There are some third-party SMTP relays out there, pay-for services that work really well with Office 365.
All right, so more questions about the SMTP relay. I just posted that again. I'm just going to post it in the general, and there's the link to it. It just says a link from Steve Hall. That is the actual document for setting up SMTP relay in Office 365.
All right, somebody asked, is some inbound mail filtered so it never goes to inbox or junk mailbox? If so, and I think something may have been blocked, we're going to cover that a little bit later, but you do get an email every 3 days from Exchange Online Protection that tells you what emails have been blocked, and you can always resend an email if you need to or approve that email, whitelist it. Okay, we'll talk about that a little later. I kind of breezed through that whole slide set, didn't I?
So you know, you're rocking.
I know. So
just looking for more questions.
Yep.
I mean,
we'll take a couple minutes, answer a few more questions, and then we'll take a little break.
And we'll come back with the Exchange Security and Protection. Questions about going back to BlackBerry and deployments. All right, so BlackBerry is a third-party service.
Right.
Can't really answer much about those, but BlackBerry does offer two services that connect to the Office 365 service, and I believe you can go to blackberry.com and find more information about that or look it up online.
Yep. Somebody asked if they can connect to a shared mailbox via their mobile phone.
Honestly, I haven't tried that. But we'll find that answer out, and we'll know in the next module.
We have. You can, but you still have that 10. I'm sorry, you have a 10 device limit on that shared mailbox. So
it can be
connected. Yeah, it has a username and password. You need
there.
To use that username and password. You need to add that as another mailbox on your phone.
Yeah.
But it does have a 10 device ActiveSync limitation.
And we didn't cover that earlier. That one of the limitations of ActiveSync is that up to 10 devices.
Right.
So per mailbox can have up to 10 devices synchronized. And if you get to that 10th, you're going to have to go in and remove a device.
So your Windows phone, your
two Windows tablets,
Windows RT tablets,
your three Outlook clients,
your three Outlook clients, maybe your some third-party devices. You can quickly reach 10. Quickly. Now, that is not a limitation on. It is a default limitation in Exchange on premise, but it can be that can be bumped up on Exchange on prem. Okay.
We all like dot locals. We understand, but it has to be changed.
Yep, it is not routable on the internet, so it has to be changed.
So it sounds like the hybrid migration is the easiest. I wouldn't agree that it's the easiest, but it does make for a nice user experience for the end user.
Yeah,
there is some more to be done in terms of getting it preparation, more servers needed, but it does certainly make for a nice experience for end users.
Right, you have to have DirSync, you have to have an Exchange on-prem of some sort. You need to have the Exchange 2013 server installed on-prem for a seamless hybrid installation.
So you want to just we'll answer a few more questions.
So we'll continue to answer a few offline. We're going to take a short 10-minute break. We'll be back in a few. Thanks. Mm-hmm.